You are listening to the fifth episode of the Bridge Commission Audio Walks, a new annual commission that marks the opening of the Serpentine Sackler Gallery. 12 internationally acclaimed authors have been asked to write short texts, lasting for the duration of the walk between the two buildings. You will be able to download a new audio walk each month from the Serpentine Gallery's website, serpentinegalleries.org. At the end of the year, you will have a collection of new writing to add to the books you already own. This story was written by the American writer and editor, John Jeremiah Sullivan. It was read by voice actor Amy Finnegan. John Jeremiah Sullivan is the author of the 2011 anthology Pulphead Essays. The Bridge Commission audio walks are supported by Bloomberg.
The first thing in my life was a bridge. Literally, in that my grandmother, who came from Kentucky, insisted that my mother give birth to me in that state, which in her essentially 19th century psychogeography meant in the South. But we didn't live there. We lived just across the Ohio in a little Indiana river town. By then, our town was, granted, just a suburb of the Kentucky city visible on the other side, where both of my parents worked anyway. We might as well have been in Kentucky. The narcissism of minor difference, a person could say. But between the two towns ran the Mason-Dixon line, the Ohio River, and a long bridge with a hyphenated name, and my grandmother wanted my birth certificate to suggest the right side of all of those things. She was a single generation removed from the sticks herself, and mindful of tiny slippages. The problem was that my mother had always hated bridges. It grew out of a childhood spent routinely riding out into the country with her insurance agent father after storms. The little clackety wooden bridges they'd cross, with missing boards over creeks high and foaming, to get to a farmer's house so her father could inspect a lightning-blasted chicken coop in some limb-strewn yard. During those trips, she developed the habit of sucking in a deep breath right before the tires reached the span, and holding it in as the car went over, reasoning, she told us, that if a collapse were to happen, she might not have time to gasp and would hit the water unprepared, whereas this way she'd have a lung full of air to last her a few seconds in the frigid stream. Today she's in her 60s, living 100 miles away from those towns, by a completely different bridge that, nevertheless, also crosses a river into Kentucky, and still practicing her breath-holding technique. As we would approach the bridge, sometimes many times a day, and I'd catch her gasping, not audibly, because she did it silently, but visible by an abrupt, slight hunching of her small shoulders as seen from behind, I would invariably have the same terrible thought, that although her trick may have made some kind of crude child sense, when she and her father had been passing over those old country bridges, it would never serve at the heights of the early 60s engineering marvel we were trusting then, suspended above a major state line river. Our fall would last much longer. Long enough that it could become necessary to release the emergency breath and try to draw another one. But could you stay focused while falling? What if there weren't time? You might actually enter the river under the disadvantage of an oxygen debt. What if you opened your mouth to breathe precisely as you were slipping into the water? Many years later, in fact it was only a few years ago, Kentucky state officials made an announcement regarding the bridge that I spent a childhood ceaselessly crossing and recrossing, and that my mother, consenting to her mother's demands, did cross on the day of my birth, already experiencing contractions. The one time she said that she ever took a breath on the bridge, fearful that to hold it in for the near minute required to pass over might rob my incipient mind of oxygen at some obscurely pivotal point. The bridge, the officials announced, bore hidden fractures in its steel. A certain type of steel, considered innovative in the late 50s, but known by more modern engineers as crack-prone. And these fractures were critical, in the sense that if the section of the bridge where they had developed were to break, the whole bridge would, too. Most startlingly, we were told that the cracks had been there almost since the construction of the bridge, and therefore all throughout the decades when we were using it, flying over it, my mother holding her breath, the rest of us thinking that she was insane. They had been hidden by some other structural element and missed by prior inspections. The bridge could have fallen at any second. They closed it for 4 months to fix it. We were gone from the area by then.
Thank you for listening. For more information about the Bridge Commission audio walks, visit serpentinegalleries.org.